Okay, my friends, today, the fifth day of the week, we are going to study about the Metzorah, about this paranormal biblical concept of lesions and discolorations. And we're going to be studying about it for the last time this year. And we are going to find, we're going to find some meaning and inspiration once again for our time and for the challenges that face us in today's COVID day and age. So, first let's study some Torah. Let's study some Torah. A brief recap of what we have learned over the last couple of days together. So there's this paranormal reality in which it's almost the original virtual reality, only for appearance's sake. Discoloration. As Maimonides puts it, varying forms of discoloration that can show up in varying surfaces that ultimately are united in a common denominator, in that this is a miraculous phenomenon and it is God speaking to the Israelite nation when they behave sinfully. And it's God's way of bringing you home. And we talked about various forms of this tzoras, as it's called in Hebrew, a tzorat. And if you'll remember, at the beginning of the week, I shared with you the words of Maimonides, of Rambam, where Rabbeinu Moshe ben Maimon HaSfardi tells us at the end of the collection of laws that govern this very concept. Maimonides is the only one to have written about it in legal syntax, because only Rambam, only Maimonides, talks about every halacha, every law, even the ones that aren't relevant in today's day and age. So Rambam tells us that if a person is mean-spirited and engages in constant slander and gossip, dividing people, planting enmity between husband and wife, siblings, parents and children, breaking apart friendships, that God doesn't look kindly upon us and He expects more from us. This is, broadly speaking, called Lashon Hara. And so that a person would get warnings. It starts off with the writing on the wall, proverbially speaking. The wall itself begins to exhibit signs of paranormal discoloration. And then if that doesn't work, then it shows up on your clothing or on your Chesterfield, your furniture. Things made of wool, linen, or leather. And if that doesn't work, if you still didn't get the message, then it might show up on your very person, on your very body. So in the parsha called Tazria, which flows into the parsha called Metzorah, which in this year, like many years, is conjoined to form a single one parsha tashavua, one parsha of the week, we speak first about tzarat that might come to a person. Afterwards, we discuss the notion of tzarat as it might come upon clothing. We hear about the purification process, or rehabilitation for a person who has been stricken with tzaras. And the Torah, only at the very end, turns its attention toward tzarat on homes. So with this little preface, let's get into the meat of things. We are now looking at the 14th chapter of Leviticus. And specifically, we're looking at the verses that begin either the fourth or sixth reading, depending when the parshas are conjoined together or not. And it really heats up in the 34th verse, where after the introduction of God speaking to Moses to convey to Aaron, we hear, Ki tavo'u el ha'aretz, Kana'an. When you will come, when you enter the land of Kana'an, Asher ani noten lachem, which I am giving you, le'achuza, as a possession, v'notati nega tzoras, I will place or give you a tzoras lesion upon a home in the house of your possession, of your ancestral inheritance, v'notati nega tzorat b'veit eretz achuzatchem. That's what the pasuk, that's what the verse says. So Rashi comments, and he says, you know that the words v'natati nega tzarat, I will place a tzarat lesion, are somewhat out of place. They're out of place because in the beginning of the 13th chapter of Leviticus, when we talked about the tzarat of a person, the Torah's verbiage was, and I quote, nega tzarat ki tihiya ba'adam, when a person might have to deal with this paranormal skin discoloration. It doesn't say, I will give you. And yet here, when it talks about the tzarat of the homes, there's emphasis, I will give you. I will place. Now, our sages point out that this notion of vinatati is a lashon besura. It's usually glad tidings, good news. Like, extra, extra, read all about it, but it's not bad news. It's good news. It's like, hey, did you hear this? In fact, the commentaries on Rashi, like, for example, the Be'er Yitzchok say that Vinatati is Lashon Simcha. It's a language that brings with it a connotation of joy. And he says, we can see this in the biblical parlance, where God tells us that if we will behave appropriately, there will be abundant rainfall. It says, Vinatati mitar artzichem. I will give the appropriate rainfall that you need, which is really symbolic of economic prosperity. Or, in the end of Leviticus, where God promises us, if we will follow His instructions, if we will toil in His Torah, God says, Vinatati shalom. I will give peace in the land. That's good news. Peace, prosperity. That's what people want. And yet, strangely, the Torah seems to be speaking here about a very negative experience, and yet it uses a language which is indicative of good news, a language that has with it at least a familiarity with the notion of joy, a glad tiding. And as our rabbis point out, lastly, it is the same word, the same notion that comprises a gift. In Hebrew, a gift is a matana. So God's giving a gift. Good news. I will gift you with tzaras. You got to be kidding. Do you know that if you have tzaras and it's a pernicious and stubborn tzaras and it doesn't go away, do you know that requires the breaking down of the walls of the home? That could require that a person demolish his home? A place to live is a very important thing. Having your home demolished, cannot be good news. Imagine that, you get a phone call or an email. Hey, Mazel Tov, your home has just been knocked down. What? Oh yeah, I gave you a little gift. I really wanted you to move to a nicer home, so I knocked your home down. Where am I going to live now? What does that mean? So Rashi says, good question. Besura hi lahem. It was good tidings. And here's why. Shanegoyim boyim aleihem, that these lesions had arrived. That doesn't mean every time these lesions arrived it would be good news. Sometimes it would simply be punishment for inappropriateness. But sometimes the tzaras could show up, and it wasn't because of a sin. It was because lefi shehitminu emorim, because an ancient Canaanite people who no longer exists, called the Amorites, used to live there, and the Amorites had squirreled away treasures, matmoniot shel zahav, gold treasure, bekirot bateim, in the walls of their home. And they did this for an extended period of time, because the Jewish people wandered in the desert for 40 years, and during these 40 years, they knew the Hebrews are coming. Kol arboim shana shehoy yisol b'midbar. All 40 years that they were in the desert, the Amorites were busy camouflaging their treasures as they buried them, squirreled them away in the walls of their home. And that's because they heard the Israelites were coming closer. And the Israelites coming closer necessarily meant that the nascent nation of Israel was coming home to the land of its ancestors, the land of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Sarah, Rebecca, Rivka, and Leah, Rachel and Leah. And so they knew that they wanted their treasures to be preserved. Problem is, when you got 40 years to build to build these cavities, these hiding places in your walls, you can really, really camouflage it well. A person who might not have any money might literally be sitting on millions in gold, but wouldn't know it. But when this lesion showed up, here's an observant Jew, what's he going to do? The walls are broken open. And suddenly, he finds the treasure. So why the Amorites? I mean, after all, the land of Canaan was comprised of Canaanites and Jezuvites and Perizzites. Why do we emphasize Amorites here? This is a very powerful question. It's even more powerful, as the Rebbe points out, because when you look into the Medrash, which is the proverbial source of this Rashi in the writings or teachings of our sages, it states very clearly, Canaanim, not Amorim. Besides which, Rashi is always ever concerned with remaining loyal to the actual text, and the text is, Kitavo el Eretz Canaan, when you come to the land of Canaan. So if it's a land that's called Canaan, then you would think the people living there are called Canaanim. Some of them were. It doesn't say, Kitavo el Eretz Ha'emori. It doesn't mention Amorites at all. So on a literal level, this whole notion of our dispossessing the nations who occupied this land temporarily, so that we would be able to inhabit the homes that they had inhabited prior to our return from the land of Egypt. Of all these nations, it was the Amorites who were particularly aware of God's promise to Abraham that they would be dispossessed. And since in the promise where God tells Abraham that his descendants will return from the land of Egypt and dispossess the recently arrived Canaanite people, especially Amorites, that the dispossession would happen as a result of God's punishment for their sins. And so, the Amorites cherished the hope that God would likewise someday punish the Israelites for their sins. And they figured that in doing so, the Israelites would be exiled from the land of Israel. They weren't wrong. They figured that they would be free to repossess and move back into their homes. They were very wrong. You know, the land of Israel has never really been inhabited by anybody else in the fullest sense since we, the Jewish people, retook possession of our ancestral and eternal homeland. There has never, ever been another government. There's never been a form of currency. There's never been a particular tradition or civilization that lived in that land with the exception of a Jewish one. And when we were dispossessed for 19 centuries, there was never another king of the land nicknamed Palestine by the Romans. It was always a vassal state, always part of a larger empire, always conquered and reconquered by various peoples, from Mamluks to Byzantines, from Christians to Muslims, but never, never was there an actual independent state or nation. That's a historical fact. So the Amorites, cherishing this hope that they would someday return, began to stash their gold in the walls of their house. And now, the Jewish people were able to find those treasures. And here, my dear friends, is an answer for the same question, but in what the Rebbe would call Bederech HaRemez VaHasoid. What I just shared with you is the way the Rebbe explains it in a level of pshat, straightforward, simple meaning. But on the level of what we would call the Torah's pretension or the Torah's preponderance to allude to things, like a pun intended. Not everything in the Torah is explicitly stated. There is the explicit, literal level of Torah, and then there are the things that the Torah alludes to, the Torah hints at. And then there is the mysteries and the secrets of Torah. And so the Rebbe says that in the Hosafot of the Alter Rebbe's magnum opus of Maimorim, called Torah Or and Lakuta Torah, but in Torah Or, on page 102, the Alter Rebbe says something fascinating. He says the word Emori, which reflects the name of an ancient Canaanite nation, is directly linked to the Hebrew word Amira, which means to say. the idea of dibur, to talk, speech. And in other words, the notion of the Emori was, here was a nation that marshaled its powers of communication and articulation and used it in an evil way. And the thing is this, the thing is that speech is very powerful. As Rambam himself, whom we quoted earlier, says, when he describes the kind of speech that would bring you to tzaras, he says, Zohi sichat harishayim, this is the speaking, the talk of the wicked. Aval sichat ksheira Yisrael, the Rambam immediately balances that with talk that is meaningful, talk that is uplifting, talk that is inspirational and insightful, talk that is life-affirming, speech that makes a positive difference. And the point being made here that Rebbe suggests is this. Speech is a powerful vehicle. Communication is a really, really potent way for us to get things done. For the bad, and oftentimes even more so for the good. So the Emori, representing slanderous speech, has gold treasures buried in the walls of its very confines. It's just that we need to break down that framework, that rubric, which is bad, which is toxic, which is harmful and hurtful. We need to break down the frame of using speech in a negative way. And if we break down those walls, then the gold treasures can suddenly come forth. And the gold treasures is using speech in a golden way. Golden words. Words that are filled with meaning, words that are filled with content, words that are filled with holy moral guidance, words that are filled with inspiration, words that can embrace and uplift, words that can comfort, words that can inspire. And the choice really is ours. It depends what we do with our ability to communicate. And it doesn't just mean the movement of your mouth or the sounds emitted by a voice box. Today we have so many means and methods of communication. Today everybody can broadcast social media. Choose your words carefully. Choose your words carefully because in the midst of what can be the most harmful and painful use of this gift that God gave people, there are treasures. If only you break out of that bad box. This is the message that really is applicable for all time. But perhaps there's an extra little message for us this year. This year when we're kind of boxed in. This year when we're all stuck within the confines of our own homes. This year when our gilded cages still seem like confinement. We still feel caged. But there are always opportunities. There are always opportunities. In the darkest and most difficult of times, there are opportunities. We must believe that in the midst of this lack of people interacting appropriately, because they can't, in this time of what has been called social distancing, what really should have been called physical separation, we have opportunities. We have opportunities to focus on others in a different way. We can reach out and connect. We have the gift of technology. We have the ability to find within that which seems to confine and restrict us. We have the ability to discover treasures. Treasures that can light up and enrich our lives. And perhaps even more importantly, treasures that can uplift, enrich, and make other people's lives more meaningful. The choice is ours. You can be an Emori. You can use the gifts or the challenges that God gives you to bring yourself down. Or you can believe with perfect faith that there are no accidents. Nothing just happens. Everything is by divine design. We're essentially kind of placed on the chessboard by God in a certain place and in a certain time. And the next move is ours. Do the right thing. Let's find a way to find the treasures. And hopefully, by utilizing the opportunities available to us now, Hashem will lift these opportunities, break out of the walls that confine us, and hopefully, not only will we transcend this distancing and separation that we are all smarting from today, but in fact, we will together be reunited in the holy city of Yerushalayim, the walled city of Jerusalem, that will, when Mashiach comes, have its walls broken down and open, for there will be no fear and no concern. A time in which all of us will live in peace, in prosperity, and universal God consciousness. May it be speedily, and in our days. Amen. Thank you.